You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO supporters. Today is another big give day for Willamette Week's Give Guide. When you donate $50 or more to KBOO or any of the other 174 participating organizations on Give Guide, you'll be rewarded with a thank you from A to Z Wineworks. With a donation of $50 or more, you could receive A to Z Rosé Bubbles, Pinot Noir, or even a screen-printed magnum of A to Z Oregon Pinot Noir. Plus, one lucky donor will win a case of A to Z Wineworks Pinot Noir. See details for each gift's minimum eligibility at kboo.fm/give. Donors must be 21 or older to be eligible for all A to Z Wineworks offers. These offers are for your total donated amount throughout today, so spread your donations across as many organizations on GiveGuide as you like. Take advantage of this A to Z Wineworks during GiveGuide's Big Give Day, today only. For more information and to support KBOO through the GiveGuide, go to kboo.fm/give.
Welcome to Bookwaves. I'm Richard Walensky. This is the first in a series of interviews examining the arts, particularly theater, during the year of the pandemic and beyond. This first interview is with Pam McKinnon, who is in her third year as artistic director of ACT, American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, which is one of the country's premier regional theaters. A noted director before joining ACT, Pam McKinnon won an Obie Award and then was nominated for a Tony on Broadway for Cliburn Park. A leading director of the works of Edward Albee, she won a Tony Award in 2013 for a revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. In the San Francisco Bay Area, most notably, she directed Albee's Seascape for ACT last season, and before that directed the musical Amelie for Berkeley Rep. Pam McKinnon, as the artistic director of ACT, 2021 would have been your third season, is that correct?
That's correct.
At what point did you realize that season number three was going to change? Had you already organized the season?
Absolutely. We were about to announce. It certainly has changed. We're a very busy organization right now. We're just not doing in-person theater. We're not doing what we usually do, but there's a lot of programming, which I'm sure we can talk about. But, you know, we were about to announce our 2021 season in March. I was in late previews for Lydia Diamond's play Tony Stone, which we opened at the Geary, and opening night happened to be our closing night because of the pandemic. So that was, what, March 11th? And we were going to, I believe, announce our season on Monday, March 16th, when the city of San Francisco shut down because of the pandemic. So it all came tumbling down within, you know, within days. And here we are.
Is that ever going to come back?
Not to ACT at this point, certainly not in the short term. That was the middle of my second season. We had the production of Gloria running at the Strand, our smaller theater, and we opened Tony Stone, so six performances in, previews into opening. Tony Stone was built as a co-production, so in conjunction with Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., and half the cast was Bay Area, half the cast was from D.C., a couple people were in the original New York production that I also directed. We still hope to do it in Washington, D.C., at Arena Stage. But those dates, of course, get pushed out.
Let's go back then. You have to shut it down, and suddenly, what is your first thought? Did you have enough backup at that point? This was before the stimulus to make sure everybody stayed on staff. What was going on at that particular time? And then as it played out, what happened?
So this is mid-March. The world is moving really fast. I mean, I'm sure, you know, everyone has vivid memories of those early weeks. I mean, certainly we immediately had to lay off people. We were supposed to be in rehearsal for Rocky Horror Rocky Horror Show. We never got into rehearsal for that, so that was a company that was going to be employed by us and then wasn't. You know, also a creative team, you know, obviously canceling the rest of the runs of Tony Stone and Gloria right in that moment. So a lot of decisions getting made really, really quickly. You know, it's not just the actors on the stage, it's creative teams. We had another show scheduled for later in the spring. So all those people got laid off. And then, of course, that also means ushers, that means house managers, that means production staff, crew behind the scenes, makeup and wardrobe crew. A tremendous number of people became unemployed almost instantly because we were no longer in production.
Well, you also have three theaters to keep open, the Geary, the Strand, which has multiple theaters in it, and also the venue called the Costume Shop. These are all venues you guys own?
We own the Geary, and we almost own the Strand. I mean, by every intent and purpose, we own the Strand. We were renting the Costume Shop, and that is both an actual costume shop, as well as, you referred to, you know, this small, kind of wonderful black box theater. So we were leasing that, those two spaces that are right next door to the Strand. And in what, probably late summer, we left that space, as well as our studio spaces at 30 Grant.
Really? So now 30 Grant in San Francisco is just the offices?
It's not even the offices. We are down to only having our owned spaces.
At the Geary or the Strand?
That's right.
So your office is now at the Geary?
Well, our offices since March have been in people's individual homes, like a lot of people. But ultimately, we will be a much more nimble, really use our spaces creatively. We're still really figuring it out. We also own a floor above the Pinecrest Diner that's attached to the Geary Theater that has been used by our box office, has been used by our telemarketers, but there is space that hasn't really been used that efficiently. So we're going to be creative and design some office space and conference space. And, you know, really, I think when we come back and are able to be in person, we will be activating our lobby spaces, our dressing rooms, our, you know, our spaces that we normally use for events or small cabarets, and we'll just be really maximizing what we own.
Have you been in touch with other theater companies outside San Francisco area to see how they're coping?
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of meetings. That is sort of the one or a silver lining in this moment. You know, geography means nothing. We're all working from home, and I have a lot of standing meetings with new artistic directors, as well as other directors, artistic directors and managing directors around the country, for sure.
Pam McKinnon, at what point did you realize that streaming would have to, on some level, replace?
Well, we were actually really early because we captured Tony Stone and Gloria, the two shows that were running, and made really early concession deals with the unions to get those two shows out on demand through a platform called Broadway HD. So we were actually one of the first. Those ran for 2 weeks in April.
Were you thinking about Zoom productions? The first one I saw was In Love and Warcraft this fall.
A big part of American Conservatory Theater is the conservatory. We have an MFA actor training program, and there were three productions that were slated for that spring for our MFA actors, our student actors, and we pivoted all of those to the virtual sphere, two of them on Zoom and one of them as an audio or radio play. So that was all in April and May, so really, really early. And then In Love and Warcraft went over so well, and there was really a hue and cry to do it again. So we did an encore presentation of it as a co-production with a theater up in Juneau, Alaska called Perseverance. And so that was probably when it sort of hit your radar. So that was in September.
Comes June, and suddenly we have Black Lives Matter. How did that affect your scheduling? How did that affect your decisions?
It fit into a lot of conversations we were already having at ACT. it just put some things more on the front burner in a really good and exciting way. You know, demands both coming from sort of national circles. We See You White American Theater, as well as another national group called Black Theater United, as well as local groups in the Bay of really, you know, demanding accountability for work being done, calls for racial equity, and we're doing the work.
Pam McKinnon, one of the issues with streaming stuff is you're suddenly in competition in a way with Netflix, with Amazon Prime. Do you think in those terms? How do you take live theater, stream it, and maintain the live theater part of it, do you think?
Yeah, it's certainly a different medium. We made a commitment in the summer to putting our conservatory and the pedagogy of our students front and center. You know, we are a large theater with a conservatory in it, as well as, you know, a wing that does, I think, really great work within the community and our education and community programs department, as well as the Young Conservatory. So a lot of, you know, sort of actor training, as well as using theater within the community. And we had to cut our budget really extremely in the summer. And with respect to productions, our streaming productions so far have been very centered on the actor training of our MFA students. So that's been, you know, both really exciting in that we hired out of the gate three local Bay Area directors, about three times as many local designers to work with our conservatory students, and working on contemporary plays. The playwrights were all involved in these processes. It really was a concerted effort to make sure that our actor training program was giving our actors access to production. I've certainly been in contact with, you know, my peer theater leaders around the country. You know, very few theaters have figured out how to make money on this work, which I guess is sort of your point about, like, you're now in competition with Netflix and Amazon. I guess I would want to separate out the difference between live, because all the productions so far that we've put out have been like made and shared live. So they are live, which is different from a Netflix show. So we are actually sharing time together, if not location.
It's live television in a way.
Yep, absolutely.
But then it comes to streaming. Is there much editing done at that point, or are they just played as they were?
So far, we've been sharing them live. So the audience and the actors truly are sharing time together. And then we have also shared them in sort of on-demand moments. So at that point, sometimes they get edited because, you know, sort of one live performance, you know, we're really learning that the tech, the technology, quite often it comes down to, you know, people's Wi-Fi strength or how much, sometimes even in a very, quote, tech-forward city like San Francisco, the marina has horrible Wi-Fi. So if an actor is in the marina at 5 p.m. and we're streaming a show, we've had these horrible tech situations where all of a sudden everything is out of sync that hasn't been out of sync before. So frequently for our on-demand portion of what we're sharing with audiences, we've edited, sort of cobbled together sometimes the four or five takes that we've done of a piece to make it sort of more pristine.
One thing that I've found, for instance, with KPFA is that certainly we are a radio station that operates in the Bay Area, but we also are KPFA.org. And as KPFA.org, we're national. Mm-hmm. And we're sort of in competition with other Pacifica stations, but also any non-commercial station. They can come to us. In that sense, ACT's shows can be seen in New York or London as well. What kind of feedback do you get on the national or international level with your streaming?
Well, certainly our two early shows, which were captures of Gloria and Tony Stone, those got a lot of national attention and even international attention. I would say about 50% of our audience was from the Bay Area, and the other 50% was, so 50% Bay Area, 25% or so about New York City, and the other 25% spread out through the country and even internationally. And those two shows garnered a lot of press because we were very early out of the gate in the pandemic with shows. I know that Terry Teachout of the Wall Street Journal wrote, basically reviewed it as this is a stream play, and he really loved the opportunity, having seen my production of Tony Stone in New York the year before, to see a different version of it with different actors, same but different and in a different medium. So we got some sort of amazing press, and that garnered some tickets, not a huge number, but some tickets around the world. And then more recently, our streaming, certainly there are people in Ireland who watched In Love and Warcraft. More recently, we did a live stream of an adaptation of Lorca's Blood Wedding. Some people in Brazil saw it. So yeah, again, a few silver linings here and there.
You're listening to an interview with Pam McKinnon, who is the artistic director of ACT, American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. I'm Richard Walensky on Book Waves. These are recorded. You can bring them back, or is that a problem with Actors Equity?
These are all student productions, right? So we're not dealing with equity for these. But it would be a matter of going back and looking at the deal that we had with the playwright or the adapter in this case.
But on the ones like Tony Stone, would that ever come back?
I doubt it. It could. I mean, it's all risk and reward, right? So if we think that there's a demand for it, we would reach out to all the unions involved. So that's Actors Equity, that's SDC, that's Stage Directors and Choreographers, that's Stage Crew, that's Writers Guild, and we would make a new deal with the people involved.
TheaterWorks, they had a musical that they managed to put on Amazon Prime. It changes on some level what all of you are doing. Do you think some of that is permanent now?
I'm a theater director. I really value gathering in space. I really value that synergy between live in-person audience and the stories that are being told, and really miss it. I'm grieving it hugely, daily. I've never gone this long in my adult life without, you know, seeing a play. And I know I'm not alone in that, wanting to be in communion with other people and wanting to be in communion through story. But I could certainly see that technology certainly lowers barriers of access, and not just, oh, it's great and cool that someone in Turkey or someone in Ireland has seen my work that was, you know, built for the stage in San Francisco, but also lowers, you know, access of ticket price. We're not charging anywhere near as much for these streamed shows as we would for in-person content. It also lowers barriers of entry for like physical accessibility, meaning that yeah, if you're more tied to your own physical space, if it's hard for you, if you have mobility issues, you can see a version of this at home. And that is amazing and gratifying. But I certainly don't see it as a replacement. I could see it as something that becomes maybe in tandem.
Do you think then when you do come back that there will be a tendency to try to record all the shows and maybe stream them for people who can't come in?
I mean, a lot of this deals with the cost of that, and the cost of that deals with people and through their unions. But I think the field has to be in conversation about this for sure. I wouldn't necessarily say that at this juncture, you know, we have plans to tape everything, but certainly, I mean, no one imagined that this pandemic would go on this long, let alone go on what Broadway is now talking, nothing until the fall. That might very well be what other theaters and other parts of the country have to decide. This is going to be with us a very long time. I also think that it's not like It's not like the pandemic will be done and everyone will come rushing back to the theater either. So I also expect a moment when there's a vaccine, some people will feel safer and more inclined to show up and others won't. And so in that sort of, in those transition months, weeks, months, it might be great to have like a hybrid model of we are live and in person and we're also live and virtual.
Sort of the equivalent of a restaurant opening and you can eat indoors, but of course it's safer to eat outdoors and it's much safer to bring the food home.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Let's talk a little bit about how you expanded out, because I went to your website. I noticed that in addition to a listing of potential shows down the road, you have something called, what you call Interact, something called Meads Reads, something called Place Here, Time Now. What are these different areas?
Cool. I'm glad you brought that up. So obviously we're punning on our initials, right? As well as, you know, acting. So when we're in person, we had a lot of audience engagement initiatives. So Interact initiatives were things like, you know, a talk back. So after a, you know, after a performance, come, you know, come down closer to the stage and ask some questions of actors. Or prior to a show, go up to a lobby area and talk with a, let's say, the costume designer about the costumes you're about to see. So interactive events. Well, we have now pivoted these to the virtual realm. So we now call it Interact at Home. And we have a lot of programming. You should check out our website. I say that to the listeners, but also to you, Richard. So we're trying to engage our audience. We're doing the best we can. I have a podcast. It's called Place Here, Time Now. So far, we have 3 episodes that are up and running. I monthly talk to 2 artists who know each other a little bit or a lot. So far, I've been in conversation with Lydia Diamond, who wrote Tony Stone, and that was along with Craig Lucas, Pulitzer finalist playwright and dear friend. And we had a rollicking conversation. After that, I spoke with Bruce Norris and Larissa Fasthorse, 2 wonderful writers. Most recently, I spoke with Philippa Sue and Stephen Pasquale. So we talk about the art form. We talk about politics. It's called Place Here, Time Now, because I'm just trying to get a current snapshot of what theater makers are up to. So that's an audience engagement attempt. Meads Reads is sort of tantamount to a book club. Our fantastic director of dramaturgy and new work, Joy Meads, and it took brainstorming what should her play reading club be called for her to realize that her last name rhymes with Reed, so Meads Reads, about monthly or every 6 weeks. She now has quite a dedicated group, and they read a play and gather, and she leads people in an amazing conversation.
There's also something called Take 10.
Take 10 is fantastic. Take 10 are these like 2 to 4 minute videos that our manager of community programs, Stephanie Wilborn, as well as some now guest artists, she creates these videos that are basically like theater games. And she takes you through these amazing exercises. And sometimes they're geared toward, you know, kids age like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and others can be done in groups, can be done, you know, by adults. It's a fantastic array of sort of unlocking creative potential. And then we've also started something called Takes on a Scene, where we're going back into the recent archives, pulling a clip from a production, an archival tape of a production, and then we have 3 different artists who watch the scene and lay down their take on it, like what, you know, what was happening from the perspective of the lighting designer in the scene, what was happening from the perspective of a director. And it sort of, it gives the, gives our audience sort of an insider's view in how theater is made.
And all of this is free at act-sf.org,
right? That's it. Yeah, this is all free audience engagement. You know, we're really hoping to use this time to like let people interact with theater, build on what they already love, educate people a little bit, and build community.
Pam McKinnon, when I began thinking about the idea of how theater functions in the pandemic, my first thought was it's all about survival, but then I guess creativity somehow rears its head and you begin to think, what are you going to do? How are you going to stay alive financially, and also how you can be creative?
That's right. That's right. It's such a balancing act right now. Certainly, we need to be really fiscally responsible and come through this strong. And the goal is always to employ. I definitely see ACT as part of the Bay Area ecosystem. We want to employ artists so that artists can work with us and then also work at a smaller theater. So we pay quite well compared to other theaters in the Bay. I feel as a large employer, we are very necessary for the ecosystem. And hopefully, while we're going through the pandemic, we also make some beautiful and provocative things.
Do you ever consider, on some level, helping the small theaters like Lorraine Hansberry or Custom Made stay alive?
We're all in a really dire situation right now. You know, I don't see them as competition at all. I feel really strongly that the more people who are making exciting theater, the more audience there will be. We talk frequently. We talk about sharing resources. We talk about, you know, sort of moments of, okay, what are the scene shops that still exist in the Bay Area? How can we work together to make sure that our craftspeople, our artisans, have jobs when we come back? How can we use space most effectively? Yeah, we're all trying to share resources, and that's sort of across the board, large to small organizations.
Pam McKinnon, the 21-22 season starts with a show called Headlands. That's made in June. That is more of a hope than a reality. How do you deal with putting a show together when you honestly don't know if the show will play?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue right now. We announced a season that is 20-21-22, and it starts off virtually, and then it becomes in person. And we made that decision based on the knowledge and the guesswork. We didn't want to announce simply a virtual season. We've announced something that spans more than 18 months, which is an unusually long window of time, because we wanted to give both our audiences as well as artists hope that we intend to come back live and in person, but always with the caveat that the dates could change, and this is all subject to the world being safe enough to gather. It's precarious right now. I mean, you can say we're in an industry-wide shutdown. Certainly as a theater maker, I am used to being in rooms with people. That's how we create our art form. That's how we share our art form. So we are, you know, becoming filmmakers. We are becoming live virtual theater makers. We are making sure that our actor training is on point and is worthwhile for both kids throughout the Bay Area and beyond, because we can do that. Those are the silver linings, that geography means nothing, as well as for our MFA conservatory. So we're working hard, but we're definitely in planning mode all the time. And certainly sometimes our plans have to change.
And one final question, Pam McKinnon. Through all this, how are you holding up?
Oh, thank you, Richard, for asking. It's stressful. It's stressful. And all this on top of presidential election and a country that's showing its true colors that, you know, at times seem very ugly. You know, a new city, you know, I uprooted my life a couple of years ago to come to San Francisco. And that's hugely exciting, hugely rewarding. But to live in a new city that sort of forfeits shut down is stressful. Like, it's kind of amazing.
Are you sleeping?
No. Who's sleeping? Are you sleeping?
You've been listening to an interview with Pam McKinnon, who is the artistic director of ACT, American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And to find out more and to listen and watch more, you can go to act-sf.org. I'm Richard Walensky on Bookwaves. The complete interview can be found as a Bay Area Theater podcast in the Area 941 section of kpfa.org. Bookwaves is produced by Richard Walensky in the studios of KPFA Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, California.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm joined today by an illustrator, educator, comics artist, and author of the new graphic novel, Odessa. Jonathan Hill, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you so much for having me.